All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for ENN on this very strange Monday, January 27th. ENN tonight is sponsored by the All-American Ford Auto Group. Shop the largest and best Ford group in the Northeast at allamericanford.net. All-American Ford is the largest selection and best prices with locations in Paramus, Hackensack, Old Bridge, and Point Pleasant, New Jersey. And I thought it would only be appropriate if we introduced ENN tonight with one of really an intro that was one of the first themes and things that was ever a part of me being on the show. This is the only way we could start ENN tonight. Oh, I have it, don't I? Perfect.
Dear Kobe.
Dear Kobe.
Dear Kobe.
Dear Kobe.
Dear Kobe. Thank you.
Was iconic around the world.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kobe Bean.
Kobe, thank you, man.
Dear Kobe. Thank you.
This would be 18 for 20 for the 81-point game.
One name.
Kobe.
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 Kobe. That's all we need.
Kobe Watch.
I feel very comfortable with my career and what I've been able to accomplish in that regard.
We say goodbye to Kobe Bryant today, and obviously we've heard from such great people throughout the day. Larry Brown, Marv Albert, Nancy Lieberman, Mike Breen. It's been fantastic, but there's a lot more audio to get to today. The aforementioned Mike Breen, who we just had on the show, he was emotional last night during the Knicks-Nets broadcast.
Welcome back to Madison Square Garden, where the Knicks and Nets will play on this unbelievably sad day for the NBA. And Clyde, on my way into the arena, I thought of Bill Gallo. Gallo is the legendary sports cartoonist that when Thurman Munson passed away, the next day he had an unbelievably touching cartoon. And it was his two characters that he had, Basement Bertha and Yucky. And the cartoon read, Basement Bertha saying, "No, Yucky, I just don't feel like playing ball today." And she was crying. And that's the way I think a lot of us feel here tonight. Just don't feel like broadcasting. I know a lot of the players, don't feel like playing. It's just a sad, sad day.
Wonderful job by Mike Breen last night. Now, we did just learn in the last half hour that in spite of the fact that the schedule went on as scheduled yesterday, the NBA schedule, that is, they have postponed the Lakers-Clippers game. I sort of have mixed feelings about it. I guess I understand they have to make a decision for what makes sense for the organization.
Well, the Lakers asked the Clippers because they're just overtaken by grief, the entire front office. The GM was Kobe's agent, Rob Pelinka.
Right.
So very close. Jeannie Buss was very close with him.
Too much.
So it was just too much to deal with, and that's not going to be a scheduling problem. They both play in the same arena.
Right. So they can just figure out a mutual off day and make that work.
Now, you mentioned, Mike Breen mentioned the Bill Gallo cartoon when Thurman Munson died, and we mentioned when Nancy Lieberman was on, because she's going to receive the Thurman Munson Award next week, that she should hook up Diana Munson and Vanessa Bryant. Kobe's widow, and we've reached out to Diana to see if she would be willing to speak about what she went through and what Vanessa might be going through, and Diana has agreed to join us tomorrow in the 4 o'clock hour.
Well, that's great. She's an awesome lady.
She is the greatest. She's the absolute greatest, and she has remained so dedicated to her husband's memory and continues with the Munson dinner, so... Diana will be on in the 4 o'clock hour tomorrow.
Reading now, that in Ardmore, Pennsylvania, where Lower Merion High School is, a shrine has, been erected in honor of Kobe, and people have, arrived there starting as early as 6 a.m. today. People started gathering at his alma mater outside Philadelphia, of course, where he became a high school legend, before paving the way for people like LeBron by going straight from high school to the NBA. And of course, you remember when he went to the NBA, it wasn't instantaneous success. The first year, he was playing about 15 minutes a game. Still looked pretty good, but did not instantly become the Kobe Bryant that we came to know and love. It took a few years. I think it was his third or fourth year in the league before he started, you know, his average really jumped. In year three, he averaged 19. The first year, he was really, like, out of control. Kobe Bryant's score was 2000-2001, 28.5 points a game. And from that stretch on, it was really pretty obscene, 28, 25, 30, 24, 27, 35, 31. And we talked about this. You said, Michael, you spoke about Jeter last week and about how one of the things that made Jeter so spectacular is that in the playoffs, he was basically the same player that he was in the regular season. In his regular season stats, Kobe averaged 25 points for his career, half a block, 1.4 steals, 5.2 rebounds, 4.7 assists. He played, of course, just like Derek Jeter, he played an astounding amount of playoff games, 220, over two seasons worth.
Right, so Derek played essentially one season, 158 games, so this is over two.
Right. Yeah. I mean, of course, the baseball season is twice as long, but Kobe's playoff stats, 25.6 points per game, a little up a little bit, that's up a tick, 0.7 blocks a game, up a tick, 1.4 steals, just like the regular season, 4.7 assists, 5.1 rebounds. He was the same player. He was even Steven, whether it was the playoffs or the regular season. Of course, he ended up leading the Lakers to five championships. Some great moments in Kobe Bryant history that we'd be remiss to not think about. 1997 in Cleveland. I think his biggest competitor in the slam dunk contest that year was Michael Finley, actually. And here's Kobe's legendary between-the-legs dunk that clinched the dunk contest for him.
The first player to go will be the 18-year-old Kobe Bryant. This is the final round. Three players advance. Each player will attempt two dunks here on a rotating basis. So Kobe will dunk, and then so will the other two. Then they'll do it one more time.
Oh, between the legs, Kobe Bryant.
Look at him. Yes. Check him out. Look at him.
The folklore begins. Of course, it started even before that. At 17 years old, when it comes to pop culture, everyone was sort of blown away that he was the 17-year-old phenom who took, at the time, pop star Brandy to his high school prom. So it's like he's sort of been famous, Michael, before anything even. You know, we really watched this whole thing unfold.
Strange, though. Don actually took a bottle of Brandy to his high school prom. So they have something.
You don't know that, to be fair.
In his inside jacket pocket, in his members only jacket.
Exactly.
One of the great moments you'll see over and over again was Game 7 of the 2000 Western Conference Finals. Of course, the Lakers went on to win the championship that year, but Game 7 against Portland, they were up 4 late when Kobe got the ball and started making his way past half court and just made a brilliant decision to spot a Shaquille O'Neal on the wing. And, of course, the famous alley-oop now. It's one of the great Shaq and Kobe moments as it ended up sealing the Western Conference Finals. Here's what it sounded like with the legendary Bob Costas on the call.
Portland has three timeouts left. The Lakers have two. Bryant to Shaq!
I mean, just so great. Just so great. And then, of course, at the Garden, January 22nd, 2008. This is not that one. My font is small. This is the 81-point game in 2008 against the Raptors. Highest point total since Wilt Chamberlain. Here's what it sounded like.
This would be 18 for 20 from the line and an 81-point game. 55 in the second half. Ladies and gentlemen, you have witnessed the second greatest scoring performance in NBA history.
Also, in the same year, the U.S. in the gold medal game, struggling to put away Spain. Who do you think did the job?
Rudy Fernandez a little late on the closeout. That's three and a foul. Kobe wants to silence those who aren't cheering for the U.S.
Takes the U.S., of course, to win the gold medal there. 61 points at Madison Square Garden in 2009. Here's the call from MSG.
His points mostly here in this quarter have been from the free throw line.
61. A new Garden record. Kobe Bryant, 61 points. Most points ever scored here at Madison Square Garden.
Amazing. And it was later broken by Carmelo, but 19 of 31, 3 of 6 from the 3, and 20 for 20 free throws.
Wow. He always shot in the 80s from the free throw line.
One of the great moments, I think, in his career, he tore his Achilles.
Right.
And he refused to, like, be carried off the court.
Oh, you want to hear it?
You have this one?
We do. Of course, Kobe ends up tearing his Achilles late in the game and goes to the free throw line. He can barely walk. He needs help getting to the free throw line. And here's what it sounded like.
And he is hurting. But the Lakers down by two, and they want him and need him at the free throw line. Made him. Lakers might foul. They might foul to get him out of the game. That's
they have to.
Do. Yeah. Kobe's coming out.
Yeah, I mean, that's the Achilles. I shouldn't say that. That's foot injury. Yeah.
Well, he was right. It was the Achilles.
And that should give Kevin Durant some hope because he came back and was pretty good after the Achilles tear.
No, he was certainly able to bounce back. In the 2010 NBA Finals, Kobe was looking for revenge against the Boston Celtics after losing to them in 2008. He struggled badly in Game 7, but in the fourth quarter, Kobe did what Kobe does.
Bryant on the pull-up, puts it in. 4-point Laker lead, their largest of the game.
Great players believe. Bryant saying, I'm going to roll these dice, and I bet not crap out. Knocks down a big-time jumper, and the bench enjoys.
Now, we all remember, because I was here doing the show with you guys when Kobe had his last game back in 2016, and Kobe was just spectacular. April 13th, 2016, the go-ahead shot from Kobe.
Mack is off of the three, rebound by Russell.
Here they have a chance.
The Lakers down one. Will Kobe give them one last gamer? Bryant on the move with the jumper.
My!
58 points! And the Lakers lead!
Little Mike Tirico.
60. Utah will go up the floor with Hayward. 13 seconds left. Hayward on the drive. Layup no good. Rebound gets in the hands of Kobe. Throws it ahead to Clarkson. And Clarkson will dunk it. 4.1 to go. Timeout, Utah.
Now, I believe the reason you're hearing Mike Tirico and Hubie Brown on that call is because that was the same night that Golden State was going for 70, correct?
73.
They were going for 73 to set the record. So Mike Breen was probably on the Golden State call, and they had to put the Kobe game on ESPN2 because there was a debate about which game ends up getting the big billing. After the game, of course, Kobe spoke. First, let's play a little bit of his interview with Jim Gray after the final game.
How do you want to be remembered?
You know, I said a long time ago, when I was 15 years old, I made a promise to myself and said, at the end of my career, I want people to think of me as a talented overachiever, that I was blessed with talent, but that I worked as if I had none. And if I could be remembered that way, that would be pretty good.
Perfect ending. You've given us a tremendous rest.
Thank you.
Kobe was also on Sirius XM radio recently, and he talked about the players that he mentored and the young players he's gotten to have a relationship with.
I have a few of them. Kyrie, certainly. I remember sitting on the couch at home after Cleveland came back from that 3-1 deficit and beat Golden State.
Mm-hmm.
And we're watching the game, and we're sitting on the couch, and me and Gianna are there just kind of hanging out. And then my phone rings, and it's FaceTime call, and I'm like, I hate FaceTime calls. Like, don't FaceTime call me, unless it's my family, right? But it's Kyrie. I'm like, all right, let me pick it up. I pick it up, and Kyrie's in the locker room celebrating on FaceTime. I'm like, dude, it worked. Your advice worked. You know what I mean? Like, he's completely freaking out. He's like, hey, Gigi. And Gigi's like, hey, congratulations. He's like, oh, my God. And, like, champagne spilling all over the place. So I was really, really proud of him. So I'd say Kyrie's probably the one I'm closest to.
And, of course, Kyrie was so broken up yesterday that he left the Garden, wasn't able to play in his first game at MSG as a Net. Because of the closeness of that relationship, he just wasn't capable of doing it.
you wonder when he's going to be able to play. I mean, he's an emotional guy. He's always been very emotional, and he and Kobe were very, very tight. And you know, you could tell Kenny Atkinson, the coach of the Nets, didn't want to play that game yesterday. He was broken up before the game. And
you want to hear from Atkinson?
Sure.
Here's Atkinson before the game talking about Kobe yesterday.
I'm just going to make a brief statement on behalf of the Nets organization, and we'd like to express our sincerest condolences to the Bryant family and everybody affected by the tragedy. As an organization, we're devastated. Our players are devastated. We have a player that was very close to Kobe. Our thoughts and prayers are with him also. Just a tough time for the NBA, for all of us. But that's really all I have to say.
Now, there's an unbelievable story that came out after the Knicks beat the Nets. Spencer Dinwiddie was really broken up as well, from L.A., grew up idolizing Kobe. A lot of people have talked about he's been so phenomenal with the absence of Kyrie Irving for much of the season, and he's played at an all-star level. And when Kobe was at the game at Barclays Center, he pulled him aside and said, "You're an all-star in my book." And Spencer Dinwiddie said, "I don't care if I go to the all-star game. That's the only validation I need it."
That's amazing.
Yesterday, Tiger Woods was finishing up his day at Torrey Pines for the Farmers. Didn't do bad, 9-under for the tournament. And as he was walking off the 18th, his caddy, Joe LaCava, told him about the passing of his friend, Kobe Bryant.
Joey just told me coming off 18 green. I didn't really understand why the people on the gallery were saying doing it for Mamba. But now I understand. It's a shocker to everyone. Unbelievably sad, and one of the more tragic days that I think, well, for me, it's the rally just kind of sitting in because I was just told Carlo about, 5 minutes ago.
You know, Joe LaCava found out, I think, at the 9th hole and decided not to tell him. He said, not that he would not have been able to play, he said, but I don't think he would have been able to properly concentrate. So he told him when he was out of view of cameras and the fans.
Probably the right. Actually, there is a shot of it. There's video of him telling him.
Really?
Yeah, it's right after they walk off. You can't really hear what he's saying. You just see Tiger at one point go, "What?" and kind of turn to him confused.
Right.
And then Tiger, that interview you're hearing, is he still, you can tell, isn't processing what happened. And he goes on to say that when Tiger lived in Newport and they lived near each other, they worked out together, but that they hadn't seen each other as often in recent years.
Looks like the UConn women, they have a exhibition game against Team USA tonight. They're going to have an honorary Gianna jersey, number 2, on the bench with flowers around the number 2 jersey for her, since you were saying before, or it was conversation about how she was going to go to UConn. So they're going to honor her tonight.
Yeah, Reggie Miller, the last time I think he spoke to Kobe, was trying to convince Kobe to have his daughter play for UCLA. Kid's 13. And Kobe said, she wants to play for UConn. That's her dream.
At 13, already his conversation. Yeah. And did you see some of the videos that Kobe had posted on Instagram with her playing in heels after like a school dance? Just heartbreaking. John Ireland, voice of the Lakers on 710, our sister station in L.A., says that Kobe changed his life.
My life's not the same if he doesn't come along. I mean, he's the reason I have great jobs, and the reason I make what I make, and the reason that this has been such a fun ride is because of him. And I can't tell you how many people can put that in a sentence and mean it. The people that work at Staples Center, the people that work for the Lakers, the people that, the Lakers and the Knicks are two of the elite franchises. Take me off of the Lakers and put me on the Knicks over the last 22 years. It's a completely different experience. It's not even close to the same. And the reason is because of him.
He certainly affected Los Angeles in a way that is sort of indescribable.
I would like to have people, if they have time sometime tonight and playing around on YouTube, if you, like, Kobe, Derek Jeter, and A-Rod all came upon the scene at about the same time. If you listen to all of them talk, their voices, their mannerisms,
the polish,
are a total amalgamation of each other, specifically Alex. Alex sounds like you fuse together Derek and Kobe, and Derek has a lot of Kobe's and Kobe sounds like Alex and Derek. It's amazing, like the three of them coming up together and becoming superstars. It almost sounds like they went to the same school. It's just amazing. And Alex said yesterday on Twitter that, you know, he's completely devastated. Now, I reached out if Alex would come on today. He couldn't even get back to me. And he just said that Kobe helped him when he was at rock bottom. He said, I've never told these stories before because it was private, but he was there. He gave me advice, what to do, how to proceed. He goes, I owe everything to him.
Well, you know, Kobe had ups and downs. We know that. And obviously what happened in Colorado many years ago is a story that followed him and is important to his story overall. And Jeremy Schapp was on Golic and Wingo and talked about how the sexual assault allegation shaped Kobe's legacy.
That was something that changed the way people perceived Kobe in an enormous way. It was something that changed the way Phil Jackson wrote in his book 11 Rings, changed the way he perceived Kobe Bryant. He said he was angry at Kobe that year. Phil wrote about his daughter having been sexually assaulted in college. And after the allegations against Kobe, he said it was almost his uncontrollable anger with this guy he'd known since he was, you know, a kid. It cost him endorsements. These are very serious allegations. We don't know what happened in that room. We know that the criminal case was dropped. We know that a civil settlement was reached. We know that neither party really after that could say anything about what happened. Kobe would say it was consensual, but he also said that he came to understand that his accuser did not regard this encounter as consensual. And so that's something, you know, that's always going to be a part of the Kobe Bryant story as well.
I was thinking about how Kobe and Tiger had a sort of similar trajectory in the sense that they were both incredible athletes who were revered for their athletic skill early on, but kind of both were considered jerks until they had a scandal that was really tumultuous. And then their second act as professionals, they appeared to be very different people. I mean, I met Kobe for the first time in 2009, and I was struck by how warm and kind he seemed and did not match what I'd perceived of him in the early 2000s. And I just wonder whether those experiences sort of shaped the way he handled himself publicly moving forward.
Well, he's an example of why I guess you give second chances, right? That you don't just set a person and how you feel about them in stone. That was a tough time. It really was for a lot of, because people were disappointed. But imagine if you just threw him away and just said, all right, I'm done with him. Like what you would have missed, right? I mean, he learned from, and I think Jeremy Schapp was poignant in saying, we don't know exactly the degree of what went wrong there because we don't know what happened inside that room. But, you know, we always think the worst, right? That's why you don't throw people away when things happen, because that second act can be very valuable, right?
You know, it's very difficult to, even reference what happened in Denver, but it's a part of his resume, so to speak. But there are some that feel that you don't speak ill of the dead, especially so close to when they die. And a political reporter from the Washington Post actually retweeted a story yesterday of the investigation of what happened in that hotel room, and she has received thousands of death threats from people. And she was eventually, I just read, suspended by the Washington Post for having retweeted that. So it's a complicated part of anybody's legacy. And, you know, again, you don't talk ill of the dead, but he was never charged with anything.
Well, I'm guessing the Post logic was, by you retweeting it yesterday,
right,
you were specifically antagonizing those who were sad and memorializing.
But if you're a newspaper, though, I mean, that is part of his life's arc, and one that he worked hard to to shake.
But I'm sure the Post is going to write about that. They probably thought, we don't want to just be tweeting out other stories.
I mean, you just have to ask, what's the motivation? What's the purpose of tweeting that at that particular moment? Now, we just brought it up, and I'm sure over the next few days, when they're talking about all the things that happened, that can come up in conversation. You know, I'm just, you look at Wikipedia. It's a part of his life. It's something that happened. But when you're tweeting it out or bringing it up specifically hours after the death, you're trying to send some sort of a statement, as if to say, this is what we should remember about him. So the motivation just seemed to be ill-placed, right? It's something that happened, but is that the defining moment? Is that what the conversation should be about while it's still so raw in everybody's mind right now? So I think that's why the suspension happened.
It's very difficult. I mean, we went – I just looked at the clock. We went 3.5 hours before we brought it up.
Yep.
But it has to be brought up because it is part of the narrative. But I don't think it's the major part of the narrative. I'm sorry, I don't. He seems – you know, you talked about a second act. I think his third act was unbelievable. That's why we're all so devastated by this. Looks like he got it, you know. His third act was all about his kids and his daughters and being a great father. That was his third act, and it looked like it was going to be great. He was going to be that gray-haired guy sitting in the Staples Center watching the Lakers and getting all that love, but they'll never be.
It's part of the narrative of his life, but is it part of the narrative of yesterday or today?
Well, I would ask anyone, you know, who's a human being who's made mistakes in their life. And again, we don't know the exact degree of the mistake. We do know that he violated his marriage. That part he was open about. We know that happened. But would anyone who you love, if a family member died, on the day that they died and you were mourning it, would you want someone to go, hey, do you remember that terrible thing they did that one time 20 years ago?
No.
Probably not.
Your motivation is to bring that person down and say, this is what I think of you're grieving. This is what I think of your memorializing the person. That's why I think the motivation is ill-placed.
And that's why I think the Post probably responded the way they did.
You do a documentary on Kobe Bryant, I think it would be irresponsible not to bring up that happened.
Right.
It does have to be in the first paragraph.
Saturday, we know LeBron passed Kobe on the all-time scoring list.
Now, to see that tweet, too, like the day before he dies, right?
It's on, and we haven't heard from LeBron since. But here's LeBron speaking about Kobe's work ethic on Saturday night before Kobe had passed away.
Just seeing the work ethic that he put into the game. He had zero flaws offensively. Zero. You backed off of him. He could shoot the three. You body him up a little bit. He can go around you. He can shoot the mid-range. He can post. He can make free throws. He had zero flaws offensively. You know, that's something that I admired as well, just being at a point where the defense will always be at bay, where they couldn't guard you at all offensively, where you just felt like you was just immortal offensively because of your skill set and your work ethic.
And that'll do it for ENN on this Monday evening.
All right, we're going to take a brief time out. We'll finish up with phone calls leading right into a Chris Carlin show at 7 o'clock. It's Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
That's right, man.
Don't miss Michael, Don, and Peter weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. Or look for us under Listen on the ESPN app.